welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 367.
Hey, hello everybody. I am excited that I am home.
I'm excited that you're home too.
We'll get into that in a little bit. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely, wonderful, can-do-it-all wife, Anitra.
Don't forget long-suffering.
Hey, not to me. I wasn't even here.
Yes, you weren't here. That was the problem.
Aw, it was a problem that I wasn't here. That's very
nice.
It
was a problem, anyway, yes. But now you're home.
I was at Gamma Expo this past week, which is the Game Manufacturers Association trade show for the year. I got to talk to a lot of publishers and some retailers and really learn a little bit about kind of the state of the industry and, you know, some new opportunities that we might have as the Family Gamers. I got to play some games. What I've been playing this week, I'm only going to share one game. It is a game that really basically hasn't been announced yet. So it's really good actually. And it hasn't been announced yet. And I'm excited to tell you about it, but we're going to get into that stuff later. First, it's fact time.
Yes. Fact time.
Okay. So, where's my flying car? That's my question. I was promised a flying car. I am now old. It is the 21st century. Give me a flying car. Well, there was a flying car designed in 2011, the Model 367 biped hybrid flying car. This was designed by a guy named Bert Rutan. He worked for a company, I don't know if he owned the company or what, called Scaled Composites. The only thing you really need to know about Scaled Composites, this is one of those like subsidiary of Northrop Grumman. They do a lot of like the skunk worksy kind of government stuff. So, you might have heard of Spaceship One and Spaceship Two. These are, I think they or some derivation of them are used for the whole Virgin Galactic situation. Like they've got like the biplane that goes up and then they drop the other plane off and it rockets into the whatever. Anyway, let's see here. So this company worked on Spaceship One to give you kind of a perspective of who these people are. But they also designed this thing, the Model 367 biped. So I don't think this is ever going to be a real thing. They've only ever made one of them, but it is kind of cool that they came up with this two airplane connected together flying car thing, you know, almost 15 years ago, that was kind of idealized as a potential way to make a flying car. There's lots of information about it on the internet. It had a maximum speed of 200 miles an hour and a range of 700 miles. It's pretty cool.
Okay.
Yep. And that's my fact about 367.
We will definitely link to something in the show notes with some more information on that.
Sure will.
But in the meantime, I have a message from our sponsor. Did you know the best time to start planning for your holiday spending is right now? But wait, you say it's only March and we just finished paying for the last holiday season. Why should we start planning for next year now? Well, because one common budget killer is, quote, one-time expenses that creep up on us even though we really should know they're coming. An easier way to make sure your bank account isn't crying next January and February and March is to look at how much you spent on holidays last year, divide that by 12, and then start putting that money aside as part of your regular budget. If you were starting now, divide it by 9 instead. However, as a bonus, when all those Christmas and July sales start popping up, you will already have money set aside for buying gifts. To schedule a time to talk to First Move Financial about other ways to take control of your finances, head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and set up an initial 15-minute call.
All right, thanks so much to the team at First Move Financial for sponsoring another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. All right, Anitra, I teased it. I will go right into it. I'm going to talk about this game that I've been playing. I played it one time.
Okay.
All right. So part of Gamma Expo is, like I said, the opportunity to meet with publishers. And I did get a chance to meet with Danny Lowe at Flat River Group, Flat River Games. We had a press streaming event a couple of weeks ago, so there weren't a lot of new games or anything else, you know, for her to announce to us. But what she did do is she did share a game that was not announced there that we actually sat down and played, and I won. But that's not the important part. The important part is that we played this game, and this game is really cool. This is a game called Compile.
Okay.
So Compile reminded me of a cross between something like Smash Up.
Okay.
And something like Hanamakoji or Voltage.
Okay, so you're saying like a two-player tug-of-war kind of thing, but you get to maybe construct your decks a little bit more?
Yeah, you pretty much explained it. So at the beginning, there's a series, and I don't know all of the details, I apologize. I'm sure there are things that Danny told me that I have forgotten, but you pick, it's like a serpentine draft. So there's a bunch of these different decks on the table that are laid out, and you pick one, and then your opponent picks two, and then you pick one, right?
Sure.
So a very similar kind of thing. And these decks are things like life, death, darkness, light. They're like kind of abstract concepts like that.
Okay.
And you take your three decks, and there's kind of like a title card for them. And so, if I remember correctly, you put the title cards like head to head, more or less. And then you take the three small decks. There's only like seven cards in each of the decks or something like that. And you shuffle them together to make a combined deck of the however many cards. And then you, you know, draw some of them. And all of the cards have numbers, like one to maybe eight or so, on them. And a lot of them have special effects. And any of the cards you can put either face up in the row that corresponds to like the type of deck, right? So I had darkness and death and something else. And so the darkness cards I could only put under darkness. Make sense?
Okay.
Right. But you could put any card face down if you wanted to as a wild. So the cards have a point value on them. Sometimes I think it could be negative. Some of them are zero. Most of them are positive. If you put something down as a wild, it's just a value of two.
Okay.
So your goal is to beat a threshold of 10 on your side, and then you basically declare, on my next turn, I'm going to compile this row, or this column.
Okay.
Your opponent is trying to do the same thing on the other side.
Yeah.
So if you say, I'm going to attempt to compile, they have the next turn to kind of respond to that. And that response could be a couple of things. Number one, it could be to build up in their column that's across from your column a value that is higher than your compile total, which has to be, you know, over 10. So if you get to 10 and say, I'm going to compile, and they can get to 11, then when you compile, theirs would actually be the successful compile. Only one of them can actually successfully compile. And so when that happens, if you successfully compile, you kind of turn over that, that, you know, deck title card to represent that it's complete.
Okay.
Does that make sense? You following me so far?
Mostly.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the game. Your goal is to compile all three of your title cards. So you're going to go back and forth. There's going to be cards that'll do things like flip cards over, move cards from one column to another, maybe force an opponent to discard some cards. Maybe the card that you put out is really powerful, but you have to discard something to do it. There's all sorts of different things like that. But it's this fairly tight back and forth. I think the whole game, including the teach, was, you know, 10, 15 minutes. And it reminded me also a little bit of Pocket Paragons in the sense that there's not like only six decks. I think there's like 8 or 12, and there are expansions planned. So that's why I kind of referenced Smash Up a little bit, like that kind of Smash Up Pocket Paragons thing where there's a lot in the box and it affords a lot of replayability. But it's really, really good. The cards that we played with were sleeved, so the box that this is going to come in is going to be big enough to support sleeved cards as well, which is, you know, just a nice to have. This game is called Compile. It's coming from Greater Than Games, and I believe it is their one of their bigger Gen Con releases. It's not a huge box. It's going to have, you know, a competitive price point, but I think this is going to be something that's really interesting. Definitely something that's going to be perfect for us on a Thursday morning. And
sure.
I really enjoyed playing it. I do have a couple of pictures of it as well. Not played out. I only took pictures of the box because I'm not that smart.
This sounds a little bit like Rift Force, if you remember that one.
Yeah, there's some similarity to that as well.
Because there were definitely special powers in the different factions, and you were drafting factions to put together your whole deck.
Sure.
But it already sounds like it probably will sidestep a few of the issues that we had with Rift Force, where that like there was just too many things you had to keep
track of. Yeah, and that kind of would have been my first response, is this is way less complicated than Rift Force. So that was the one game that I played. I mean, I actually played a ton of stuff, but
you
I
played
know
a ton of games.
Anitra, that first of all, you didn't play a ton, and also we have a whole bunch of interviews with publishers, which is, you know, the interview part of this show.
Yeah, well, so as we just alluded to, I actually did not play a single game the entire time you were gone. Not one, unless you count Board Game Arena.
Well, I mean, you were saddled with the responsibility of keeping children alive.
Keeping children alive, keeping my mother alive in a nursing home. Like, there was a lot. Also, multiple kid concerts. Like, It was just really, really busy.
Mm-hmm.
But I am going to mention, right after we recorded the podcast 2 weeks ago, we had a game night with a friend of ours, and he showed us, let's see if I can get the name right on this, Nidavellir?
I think Nidavellir.
Nidavellir?
Yeah.
I was definitely not prepared for this game to be as fast-moving and simple to get into as it was. It looks like a way more complicated game, because this is a game with a bunch of setup. You have to lay out all these various special cards that people might be able to buy during the game. But then the game itself is like, I'm going to bid on the rows of cards that have just come out. Highest bid gets first pick in each row. There's a few other things about upgrading the tokens that you bid with. But your real goal is to make combinations of the 5 or 6 different suits of cards, because each one scores in a different way. And getting certain numbers of symbols lets you buy the special cards and stuff like that. And it was way more streamlined than I thought it was going to be. And when we were done, I pretty much immediately wanted to play again, but it was the end of the night and we didn't have time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game as well. I wish there were less moving parts. You know, do you know if Nidavellir is on BGA? Because this is like a perfect game for BGA.
It looks like it is. You and I should play a game that's on Board Game Arena against each other.
Yeah, I feel like that'll happen.
I think that's a good choice.
Sure.
But yeah, the biggest problem with this game is there's just a lot of setup for it being a very light, very fast moving game, which is also part of why immediately when we were done playing it, I was like, we should just play this again because half of the setup is done already.
Right. I did have, at the end of that game, a pretty sweet extra move, and if I had calculated one thing a little bit better, I would have won the game.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was pretty neat. So, obviously, morons like me can pick it up and do, like, a next-level strategy thing, I mean. Not just, like, I'm executing on the mechanics. But it's pretty good.
But, I mean, it's not nearly as heavy and complicated as it looks, and there's very little reading involved. So this is a surprisingly family-friendly, child-friendly game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And the art's great. I mean, just looks fantastic.
Very cool. It's
really, really
good. Full of all kinds of, like, dwarves, I guess, or Norse...
Norse stuff.
Norse people.
Norse people. No.
Yeah.
Yep. So, all right. Well, we're going to keep it short because we do have about an hour of interviews. We also have a special for science with some special guests.
I cannot wait to hear this.
So, Grand Gamers Guild, Mark Spector, and David Diaz, Mesa Game Labs, and myself, we went to the Claudia Sanders Dinner House. This is basically the former home of, you know, Colonel Sanders of KFC fame. Our middle child said to me before we left, Dad, if you go to Kentucky and you don't go to KFC, I will be very disappointed in you. And, you know, I guess the young man could use some perspective. But seriously, I looked at him in the face and I said, son, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to eat at his house. And that pretty much blew his mind. So we did. And can't wait to tell you about it after a break, in which we will be talking about a fun game called Picky Pixie.
We'll be right back. Everyone has some experience with picky eaters. And it seems like foods that our kids like one day, they refuse the next.
I can't help you solve that problem because I would have done it by now, but I can help you discover the dietary restrictions for a fairy tale creature in the new game, Picky Pixie.
Picky Pixie is a compact deduction game for 2 to 5 players ages 8 and up by Elizabeth Hargrave. It's published by Button Chai.
Each player gets a turn to be the pixie, while everyone else will try to figure out what flowers they want before the deck runs out.
So let's talk about the art in this game. Annie Wilkinson made the art for Picky Pixie. There's a pixie card with yes and no on it. She makes me think a little bit of the fairy tale characters from Shrek.
I think, like, inside out emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the meat of the game is these 16 double-sided offer cards. Each one has 4 groups of flowers, and they have a pretty border.
We've got orchids, roses, daisies, and trumpet flowers in 4 different colors. Each type is clearly different, but the rose illustration doesn't really work well for us with all these colors.
That one, maybe they could have done a little bit differently.
Not included in the little wallet here is paper and pencils. You'll want some for every player.
All right, we're talking about flower groupings. What do we actually do with these? Let's talk about the mechanics for Picky Pixie.
Start by choosing a player to be the first Pixie. They take the Pixie and the reference cards. Then they draw two flower cards and make up a secret flower rule. At least one group on one card must pass the rule, and at least one group on the other card must fail the rule.
What makes a rule? Well, in a standard game, it is an amount and a category. The amount can be an exact number or something like at least two or less than three or an odd number of. The categories are listed on the reference card. They include types of flowers, colors, or alternate categories like colors, as in at least two colors, or total flowers, like less than three flowers.
Once the Pixie has come up with their rule, they write it down. Then they tuck their two flower cards underneath the Pixie card, showing one group of flowers on the yes side and one group of flowers on the no side.
Now, the rest of the players can start making offers and trying to deduce the rule. On each player's turn, they take the top flower card from the deck and then choose one group to offer to the Pixie player. The Pixie player takes that card and tucks it so that the offered group is showing either under yes or under no.
Anytime an offer has been made and a flower group has then been tucked, any player, whether it's their turn or not, can call for a guess. If a guess has been called, every player writes down their best guess at what the rule is, while the Pixie takes a card off the deck and places it below the Pixie card. This just tracks how many guesses have been called.
When everyone has written their guess, reveal them all. The Pixie tells the group if each guess is correct or incorrect.
If no one got it right, and there are still at least two cards in the deck, continue with the next player making an offer.
But if one or more players did guess the rule correctly, they get points. 1 point for every two cards left in the deck. The Pixie gets 2 points for every time a guess was called.
Remember, that's why we put cards down to mark each guessing session.
Then you're shuffling the deck back together and passing the Pixie and reference cards to the next round's Pixie. When everyone has had a chance to be the Pixie, the game is over. Who managed to get the highest score?
There are, of course, variations if this is too easy. You can make more complicated rules to spice up the Pixie's palate.
There's also a two-player variant in which the Pixie must give an additional clue with a new flower card after each incorrect guess.
So what did we expect from this game?
Well, let's start with what we know. This is an Elizabeth Hargrave game, so we knew it would have some kind of nature element to it. It's a button-shy game, so we knew that it would make clever use of a small number of cards. We saw that it said 8+, so we figured probably not a lot of reading.
This is the fourth game I've tried from Elizabeth Hargrave. She's really great at finding unusual themes in nature and in the stories that we tell each other. I love her other button-shy game, Tussy Mussy. I hoped this would have the same kind of feel as that. Easy to learn, but making players study each other to play well.
I really like deduction games, and we've seen things like this before in games like Visitor at Blackwood Grove. We really like that game, too, once we figured out all of the confusing rules. But like we said, this is a button-shy game, 18 cards, 8+. I figured it would be a little bit simpler, and so I was excited to play this one. But there were some surprises, too, right?
Yeah, I was surprised at how freeform the rules could be. Even within the framework that's provided, there's a huge difference between a rule like exactly one color, or an even number of flowers, or, you know, at least two pink.
For me, this actually made the game a lot harder. It was also weird that the guessers didn't always feel like they should guess. Maybe fear of being wrong, I don't know. Especially in a two-player game, it's really easy to run down the pile and never be able to come up with a guess for the rule that you feel good about. In reality, while the guesses do give the Pixie some points, they're not that big of a deal, so it's okay to be wrong. Andrew, it's okay to be wrong.
When we played with our kids, I loved that everyone actually gets a chance to guess. Every time a guess is called, everyone guesses. And then you can learn from other people's incorrect guesses, too. That was a fun thing for us to see our kids learn and then put into practice.
So, Anitra, it's that time. Do we recommend Picky Pixie?
I think this game is best for kids and adults who already like deduction games. With the limited information you get from the flower cards, putting them on yes or no, it can be really hard to piece together a rule, and our youngest found it pretty frustrating.
Yeah, for me, I just don't think there's enough here built up around the deduction part to help kids along if they're new to this genre. For that, we would actually recommend games like Outfoxed or Deducto.
I mean, I thought it was great. I can't wait to play it again. Just remember that you'll also need something to write with.
We're going to give Picky Pixie 4 flower buds out of 5.
And that's Picky Pixie in a snap.
Hello, everybody. This is Andrew with Family Gamers. We are sitting in the Claudia Sanders dining house, right?
Yes.
Yeah? All right. Dinner I am house, I dinner house, whatever it is. I'm here with David Diaz. Say hello.
Hello.
And Mr. Mark Spector.
Hello.
We're going to eat a whole bunch of fried chicken, and then we're going to talk rolls. About it. And good some time. Rolls. Man, the rolls. Holy cow, the rolls.
Amazing. Best rolls.
David and I picked up rolls at the same time, and we both kind of groaned at just how good they felt. And that was before we ate them. So that's... It's a portent of things to come, I hope. We'll be back soon. All right. Well, we're back in the car. We rolled our way out of there. I'll start with Mr. Mark. What was your favorite thing?
The Kentucky Fried Chicken House, or whatever this place is called, is a whole that is greater than the sum of its parts. I'm not sure it could be broken down. It was absolutely the epitome of what you'd expect of KFC Southern cooking.
It was very poetic.
Yes, it was.
I appreciate that. What was your favorite part, Dan?
I think the surprise of the dinner rolls was wonderful. Because I'm not usually a bread guy. And those are fantastic. I ate 3 of them, which didn't help with finishing the rest. But I did get an extra piece of chicken. So I felt like I ate enough. And those sides were fantastic. Except the mac and cheese. I wasn't crazy about that.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So... Waitress came out with some... What? There is that a raccoon? What is
nope,
that? A cat?
It's a cat.
There's a cat just walking around outside. Oh. Okay. She brought out dinner rolls, and David and I grabbed for them at the same time, and we both picked up a dinner roll and kind of groaned in happiness because they felt so delicious. I don't know how else... Would that be an accurate description?
They felt like they would taste amazing.
And then they did,
taste
amazing. Yeah, so let's talk about what we ordered. David and I, we ordered the unlimited fried chicken,
yep.
I guess.
All you can eat fried chicken and sides.
So it was the sides that called to me because you get 4 sides with the unlimited fried chicken.
Yeah.
So what did you get?
I got the mashed potatoes and white gravy, the corn pudding, the spinach, what is it called? Spinach pudding?
Creamed spinach,
and the mac and cheese. And I had a soup, the dumpling, chicken dumpling soup.
I had the, I also had the macaroni and cheese. I had the corn pudding. I had the mashed potatoes, but I had the stewed breaded tomato. I don't know, something like that. And what did you get, Mark?
I got for my dinner this chicken biscuit thing. It was biscuity and fried and cheesy and melty, and it was unbelievable. And it too came with a couple sides, corn pudding and mac and cheese, and it was, I couldn't finish it. That's how much food it was. Holy mackerel.
And then just to add on, we ordered a hot brown for the table.
Kentucky hot brown.
Because that was wise.
I mean, anyway, so...
It was a local thing. You had to try it.
Yeah, exactly. So nobody finished their food. There was too much food.
Way too much.
But everything was delicious. Yeah. Some things more than others. I think pretty much universally around the table, we agree that the mac and cheese was the most disappointing side. Is that true?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. So if you go to the Claudia Sanders... dining house in Shelbyville, Kentucky. Everything is good except the mac and cheese, and I think that's about it, guys. We
corn pudding was my favorite.
The corn pudding was pretty darn good.
And that cream spinach was surprisingly tasty too.
Yeah, I was surprised that the breaded stewed tomatoes were like thicker than I expected.
Okay.
They carried their flavor really, really well.
Nice.
So
fried chicken
and the fried chicken was excellent. Yes, of course. I feel like that was
assumed, right? Yeah.
So we got some pictures with the Colonel, so maybe we'll throw a picture
and
in the
Claudia.
In the show notes. And Claudia, of course. Oh, it's her house.
That's
she
right.
She got the name on the door, so we got the pictures with the Colonel. Anyway, that is this place, whatever it's called, for science. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everybody. It's Andrew, and I'm a Gamma, and I'm here with Ask Adelia, and we're going to talk about a game.
A game. Indeed, a game.
Yeah, this game is called Trash Talk.
It's a good game.
Are we going to talk trash?
We're going to talk trash right now.
Okay, so tell me about Trash Talk.
Trash Talk is a party game for 2 to 8 players, but you can definitely play it with more. And I love that it's scalable for 2 or 8 or all that. But it's a game all about language and the barrier between it, between raccoons and possums, because they don't speak each other's language, but they do both love trash. So you play as a raccoon, basically, and you're trying to get the possums to understand what you're saying, but you can only use trash items.
Okay. I learned in the rule book, it talks about the difference between possums and opossums, which I didn't know that was a thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The picture that we have is an opossum, and we are very aware of that, but we do call it a possum in the rule book just to make it a little bit easier and like more aesthetically pleasing for people to enjoy on there. But we do notate it in the rule book that we do understand that we are wrong. And we do not care.
I love that. So can you give me an example of how the mechanics of the game, like how does this trash explanation thing work? What are they trying to explain? What are the actual kinds of items that they would use?
Oh, absolutely. So in the game, you're given a bunch of trash items, things like cocktail parasols, or there's a little toy slinky or a little toy car, and there's 2 sets of everything, 1 set for the raccoon and 1 set for the possum team or singular person, because it is 2-player. And basically they're kind of little cards, kind of like the code name cards, if you're familiar with that game, and they have a word on it. It could be something like race or diamond or shiny or Mary Poppins is one of the cards. And the raccoon picks 3 pieces of trash to start, and he puts them behind his little cute little visor with some phenomenal artwork. And the possums also get the equal same amount of trash in the same pieces. And the raccoon behind his little visor is going to pair each trash item with a specific card. And then you, as the possums, are going to discuss or solo decide what the raccoon paired them with and why. Like, why does the umbrella go with Mary Poppins? Or maybe why such and such go with race? But you are limited to those pieces of trash and those words. And if you get it all right, the next round, you get to add 1 more card and 1 more piece of trash. And the goal is to try to get as many words and trash. The goal is 10. But obviously with a party game, you finagle the rules however you want.
Sure.
But it's up to 10. If you can get all the way to 10 words with 10 pieces of trash, you win the game.
That sounds very silly.
It is very silly, but it's actually a lot of fun. It's really good, especially... like target audience is kind of going to be everybody. Like it's scalable for kids because kids are interested in the trash, but it's teaching them descriptors. Like why are you describing an umbrella as shiny or steam? Like it steams when it rains. So maybe you want an umbrella. So you're not just looking at the item. You're looking at the color, what it's made out of. And it's, you know, it gets that creativity going, but for adults it's also super challenging too. So it's kind of great for all age ranges.
So one could say that you could play it as a family.
As a family, absolutely. That's actually the perfect description for that.
All right, awesome. So I didn't actually mention who makes Trash Talk, so we should talk about that.
We should. So Friendly Skeleton was previously known as Deepwater Games. Friendly Skeleton is now their own company, and this is their first game, Trash Talk, and it will be actually releasing retail on April 5th for
$20. $20?
And the thing I didn't tell you about the game is if you want to expand your own game, if you have 2 identical pieces of items, like 2 coins or 2 pieces of, like, I have 2 cat collars I put in the game, any 2 identical items you can continue to add to the box to make your game bigger and more personalized for your own adventure.
That is very clever.
It is very clever.
All right. So April 5th, you said?
April 5th.
April 5th.
Going to retail.
You can get it in your friendly local game store.
It should. Yeah. That's Asmodee is our distributor for this. So it should be available there. And the rumor and hopes is later on in the fall season, it may be going to Barnes & Noble's as well.
The air quote rumor and hope.
The air quote rumor and hope. That's the plan.
All right. So definitely friendly local game store. You can find it on Amazon.
Yes.
Can you buy it direct from Friendly Skeleton?
Yes, absolutely. You just go to the website.
So friendlyskeleton.com?
Yep.
All right, perfect. Well, Asmodee, thank you very much for talking with me about Trash Talk.
Absolutely. And I just got to remind you to stay dorky, though.
All right, not a problem. Hello, everybody. It's Andrew, and we are at Gamma, and I'm standing in the Hawberry Games booth. And I'm with Julie, who is the everything at Hawberry Games. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you guys?
So you have 2 great-looking games here. One is super, super adorable, and one is less adorable, but also very thought-provoking. And I would love it if you could talk to me about them. The first one is a game called Cake Off.
Right. So Cake Off is a play on words, Bake Off, Cake Off. But it's actually, the off is A-U-F, which is German for on. So the game technically means Cake Off or Cake On. And the reason we have some foreign language in here is because the recipes in this game come from 26 different countries. And it's a dessert competitive battle game. So you're trying to be the first one to make all the recipes before the other players do. And it's highly competitive. Yes.
Yeah, I really love it. You showed me a little bit of this yesterday. And to me, it reminded me a little bit of Kim Joy's Magic Bakery mixed with Mealborn. And I know I mentioned that to you yesterday when we were talking about that.
Yeah. I was inspired by so many different great games out there. Personally, I watch a lot of Chopped, which is one of my favorite cooking shows of all time. And I play a lot of Overcooked on the Nintendo Switch. And so for me, baking and cooking is something that makes me really happy. And so I wanted to make a game that would, you know, bring a smile to people's faces whenever they break it out on the table.
Well, I definitely think this does exactly that. It's very cute. The color palette is clearly a color palette that's meant to be like less aggressive. And yet, you can still do some kind of take-that-y things to your opponents.
Yeah, I designed the game to be very interactive because I really like games like Exploding Kittens where you can mess with the other players. So, for example, some of the recipes use fire, so someone can pull the fire alarm on you. Some recipes use power, so they can pull the power outage card on you. And for the special ice cream cards in the game, once you finish them, someone can freeze or burn those ice cream recipes right out of your kitchen. So that's one of my favorite parts of the game.
How rude. But seriously, it's a wonderful small box game. How many cards are in the box? Looks like maybe 100 to 120-ish.
There are 88 cards in this game.
Close.
Yes. You did a good job. And actually, 88 is a really the number for luck and fortune in Chinese, and I'm Chinese, so for me, it's a special meaning in my heart.
Oh, that's awesome. I should also mention that you are a Horizon Fellow at the Gamma Expo this year, so that's awesome as well.
Yeah, I'm really grateful to Gamma for making this program, giving us, you know, up-and-coming designers who are underrepresented a voice in the industry. So, you know, I've been doing this for about 2.5 years, and to have something like this, you know, come into my life has been really helpful.
That's awesome. So we've got Cake Off, which is this really just cute, adorable game with, you know, a lot of super interactivity. But you also have this other game, which is just like just coming out swinging with something. It's not heavy, but there's a lot going on in emotional intelligence.
Yeah, so the thing about emotional intelligence, people always ask, like, you make a cake game, and now you're making a game about personality types. What's the story behind that? And for me, I've always been a fan of Myers-Briggs in my life. Like, it's helped me a lot to understand the people around me. And what it is whenever I meet someone, I try to mentally deduce what is their Myers-Briggs, because I'm like, that would really help me figure out how to communicate with them. And so I always thought it'd be great to make a board game about this. And to my knowledge, there's not another game about personality types. So I really just wanted to give it a go, do something, you know, new. And this game is basically you get a secret personality type that's not your own, and you play from the perspective of that character and answer thought-provoking and hilarious questions, and other people try to figure out what your personality is based on those answers.
So I'm looking at the table right now, and there is a question in front of decision-making, which is the L and the M stand for what? Logical and?
Empathetic.
Empathetic, okay. And it's dim sum or tacos. And if I'm answering from my personality type, because I didn't draw a card, I'm going to say dim sum, like, well, I would say dim sum is more logical. That's what I would say.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, so the thing about this is that it is very much abstract kind of thinking. You never might have considered which one is more logical between dim sum and tacos. But why would you say dim sum is more logical? I want to hear your answer.
I feel like dim sum, there's kind of, it's not ceremonial, but there's a very kind of organized way in which dim sum is, you usually go to dim sum like on a Sunday morning, like it's right. A, like there's kind of a little bit more organized. I suppose you have Taco Tuesdays, so now I'm talking myself out of it, but I just feel like there's a little bit more of this kind of like, ceremony is not really the right word, but there's a little bit more organization around it.
Definitely a ritual around
it. Ritual is a good word.
Yes, because dim sum, you know, as if you're familiar with Cantonese culture, it is served in usually little like bamboo baskets. And so the fact that that is, it makes it feel very logical and organized and structured.
See, you got it.
I would also agree that dim sum is more logical.
Excellent.
Yeah. And what about if we have dim sum or tacos under extroversion? Which one do you think is more extroverted?
Oh, that's I'm going to say tacos.
Really? Is it because of Taco Tuesdays?
It's because a lot of times when you get tacos, you go to like a toppings bar.
Right.
You're forced to kind of socialize with people while you're putting toppings on your tacos.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, I have not considered that, but I think that is really No, it's really valid. And the whole point of this game is that everyone's perspective is valid. So for me, because I am Chinese, when I go to dim sum, the whole point of dim sum is it's at small bites, and you can't go by yourself. You physically can't go by yourself. They won't seat you because you need to order many, many baskets to share among different people.
Okay, so that's fair.
Dim sum is an extroverted activity, whereas with tacos, I can just order takeout and just eat it in my apartment.
Yeah, I love that because I'm now learning something about dim sum. That's clever.
Yeah. So the whole point of the game is to basically learn about how other people think about the world, you know, experiences that you may never have had, and then you learn vicariously, you know, that your best friends, you know, you might have never thought that your best friend thought dim sum was logical, which is like really, you know, random, but you now know more about them.
That's awesome. So we've got Cake Off and we've got Emotional Intelligence from Hawberry Games. Can you buy them now?
Yes, they're available on our website, hawberrygames.com, or you can just Google, you know, any of the games on Amazon, and you can find them in a lot of your local friendly game stores as well.
Awesome. And how much do they cost?
So Cake Off is a very affordable $20, and Emotional Intelligence is a much bigger box, and it's at $30.
I think that's still a very affordable price. And you can learn interesting things about your kids if you play a game like Emotional Intelligence.
Definitely. You cannot definitely argue with them until they give in.
I can just imagine my kids playing the game. All right, Julie, thank you so much. Julie from Hawberry Games, a Horizon Fellow at Gamma Expo this year. Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and this has been really fun.
Hello, everybody. Here we are at Gamma once again, and I'm in the Pandasaurus booth with Reyna. Hi, Reyna.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going great. You have 4 games featured at the front of this booth, and I think we're going to talk about them. I have a feeling.
Yes, we're going to try to get through them as quickly as possible.
All right, let's start with Mind Up.
Mind Up is a little nifty card game. You are going to be drafting cards in the market and putting them in front of you in your tableau, kind of like set collecting. The unique thing about this game is in order to win the cards, you actually have to play cards from your hand. And what I mean by that is everyone is going to simultaneously pick and play a card from their hand and reveal it, and then you're going to put it in ascending order directly below the market. Now, the reason why you do that is because the card that is directly above the card that you played is the one that you actually win and put into your tableau. So it's like a little nifty mechanism where you have to try to predict what other people are going to play to predict the card that you want to go ahead and win.
I love that. That's very cute.
Yes. The next game we have is Gnar. This one has actually been released already in February. And this is a little engine building game. Thematically, you are recruiting these Vikings into your band and sending them out on explorations. On your turn, you're going to play a Viking card from your hand. And it's important that you keep them organized by color, because whichever color that you play, you're going to activate all the Vikings from that and gain all the resources from that. It also determines what card you're going to get from the market. So if you play a red card, go ahead and look at the red column and you'll take that card into your hand. You can also send them out on exploration. So you just turn in a certain number and color of Vikings depending on what card you want. That's another way to score points. The entire game is a race of 40 points. That'll trigger the end game. Then whoever has the most points at the end of that wins.
So I think this art rules. It looks awesome. I really want to make a gnarly joke, but I will refrain from doing so. But what's the age range on this?
This is for ages 10 plus, 2 to 4 players, plays in about 30, 45 minutes.
I love it. I'm on board with this one for sure. All right, let's talk about Courtesans.
Yes, so Courtesans, thematically, the queen is having a banquet, and you are doing your best to sway the different influences of the families that are attending. So on your turn, you're going to draw 3 cards, and you must play one into the queen's table, one into your domain or your tableau, and the third one into any other player's tableau. At the end of the game, you're going to score points based on the cards that are in front of you, and that's going to be determined by the family standings at the queen's table. So what I mean by that is that there are more cards above than below the queen's table, then that family is considered esteemed, and you get 1 point for each of those in your tableau. On the contrary, if there are more cards below than above, that family is considered disgraced, and you're negative points for each of those in your family. It's a neat little, like, take that super quick. A lot of fun. You also have these cards with different powers. For example, the assassin will allow you to eliminate a card. Defenders cannot be eliminated, and then spies are always played face down.
All right, and so it's got this beautiful cloth mat in here. Is that in the box?
Yes, absolutely. It's a little canvas game mat. All the cards have gold foil. And we're really excited to get it down to a $25 MSRP.
For what I'm seeing on the table, that is super impressive. This is, I'm looking at 2 to 5 players, 20 minutes, ages 8 plus.
Yes, super quick.
Yeah, so very impressive. All right, let's go. It's pretty far away. Let's go over to see Far Away.
All right, lastly, we got Far Away. This is probably our most anticipated game this year. Thematically, you are journeying into this mysterious village of Alula, and you're doing your best to meet the different inhabitants and just have a great journey. So you have these different cards here, and they score you points based on different icons or color cards that you may have. However, some of them have requirements that you must meet in order to score. For example, this one says that you need 2 crystals and 2 of the red icons in order for you to score 16 points. Now, the unique thing about this game is after all players are done drafting 8 of their cards, the game's played over 8 rounds, you're going to flip them all over, and you actually reveal and score them from right to left. So you have to be conscientious of the cards that you're playing, knowing that they're going to score in reverse order. So this one is 2 to 6 players, plays in about 20, 30 minutes, and it is ages 10 plus.
All right, and all 4 of these are fairly small box games, which is pretty cool.
That's what we're loving nowadays, small box, accessible games, easy to get to the table, portable.
Awesome. And I know I said 4 games in the front, but there is this pinball game. Can we talk about the pinball game? It's not a small box game, I don't think. All right, let's talk about Box Top Pinball Haunted House.
Yes, so Box Top Pinball is our take on what pinball would be like in tabletop form. So it's a lot like Tumbling Dice. You're going to be on your turn clicking dice down and then resolving things based on what happens. If you have these monsters and you hit them, you get points. If you hit these little clue tokens, you get them and you get points as well. And then also, at the very end of the round, once everyone is done flicking their dice, you're going to look at what's left on the board and score for those. So for example, this 2 die is in the x3 area here, so that would get 6 points for green. So this is coming out in September. It is a $30 price point. I don't know if you can tell by the prototype, but the box actually becomes the playing field itself, a lot like Ice Pool. And yeah, it's really marketed towards children, families with kids, or just anyone who has an inner child.
Yeah, it's super clever. I really like the holes in the box with little like signs, almost like gravestone kind of things. That so, you know, you flick something, it'll kind of stop and then fall in the hole.
Exactly.
You know, all sorts of stuff like that.
Definitely. Yeah, if you flick it in the hole, then you lose it, and that's it.
All right, awesome. I will take a picture of this one, and that'll be in the show notes for this show. This is definitely something to look out for, especially if you've got that kind of young family and you enjoy flicking games.
Exactly, yes.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you, Raina, for 4+1 games that we talked about. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Hey, everybody. It is Andrew again at Gamma, and I am in the Fireside Games booth. Everybody knows how much we love Fireside and all the stuff that they do. Most of it is Castle Panic, but there's a new game. I think it's new. I haven't seen that much about it. Anyway, Justin is cackling like a madman. He's going to tell us all about Ultimatch.
Yes. So this is Ultimatch. It is a little different for us. It's a small box card game, and it is cooperative like a lot of our stuff, so you're all on the same side. And what we've got here is a pyramid. You know, this is great radio right now. We're talking about the shape of a board here.
I'll put a picture somewhere.
Oh, okay, perfect. So you've got a pyramid of face-down cards, but the last row is face-up. And what you're looking at are cards that have big numbers on them and big, bright colors. We got red, orange, yellow, purple, and blue, and then you got the numbers 1 through 8 in each of those suits. But there's only one of every card in here, so there are, like, not 2 purple sevens. You'll never see them. We are all going to get a hand of cards, and then what you're trying to do is make matches to clear this pyramid out, row by row, working our way up. Matching starts out like every other game you've done, where yes, I can match a 4 for a 4, and I can match a blue for a blue, but then it gets more interesting in that using the cards in your hand, I can use addition or subtraction to make a numerical match. So for example, I've got an orange 3 over here. I don't have an orange card in my hand, but I have a 2 and a 1. They're green and purple, but it doesn't matter. I'm just using them for the math of 2 plus 1. I can now clear this card out of our pyramid. That's a bit expensive because it took 2 cards, but it is a way to make that match. To flip that around a little more, let's say I had red and blue in my hand. I don't care what number they are, but red and blue make purple. I can clear a purple card by doing that match of literally just any number, red and blue makes it, boom. So you can always match by blending colors for the secondaries and math up or down, 2 cards only, addition, subtraction, to make a numerical match. But what you really want to do is make an ultimatch. That is where you get an exact match of the number and the color. And that's always going to take 2 cards, because like I said, there's no duplicates. You can do that with a primary, like this red 3. If I had, say, like a red 4 and a red 1, I could subtract. That would be an ultimatch. I've got color and number. Secondary colors are the same thing. A yellow 3 and a red 3 would get me this orange 6. If you do that, that's an ultimatch. Not only do you clear the card, you get to draw 2 cards from the deck. One of those cards goes into your hand. The other one goes down into this row of face-up cards down here at the bottom we call the Altaham. This is actually built at the beginning of the game by every player contributing 1 card to a common pool. We all have access to that. So on your turn, you can use the cards in your hand and these Altaham cards. The hard part is they start dwindling. We will use them, we will burn through them, we will start running out of cards. The only way to draw new cards is to make an ultimatch and get those 2 cards in your hand. Otherwise, card starvation is a real thing, and that's usually how we die. Because what happens is if you cannot play on your turn, you have to pass, and you do get to draw a card, but you don't get to play it. You could maybe make a trade or something with another player, which I'll get to in a second, but everyone who passes, they just draw it in their turn, and if all of us pass on the same turn, that's it, game's over, we lost. So you can pass and then get reset if someone else plays, but if it's a pass, we're all dead, game's over. Trading is done face down with no conversation. So if I'm looking at this Alta hand and I realize, oh my gosh, if I give you my red six, you'll be able to make a purple seven over there. I can hand the card to you face down, but I can't tell you what it is. You have to decide if you want to make a trade. Hopefully I'm very enthusiastic in how I'm handing it to you. Maybe I'm jumping up and down a little. And you decide, sure, I'll make your trade. And then when it gets into your hand, you go, oh, thanks for that red six. Look what I can do. You can also do that sometimes just to have any trade when someone's hurting. And if someone has no cards in their hand, it's the only way to keep the game going is to feed them something they can play. So a good mix of like, oh, this is easy, and then, oh my gosh, desperation, we're all gonna die.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be a trade. It can just be I'm giving you a card.
Only if they don't have anything. If they have a card, it has to be a trade. It can be a gift when they're out of cards.
Okay. And when they're out of cards, they by default just have to pass, and that's not a good thing, right?
Unless you can trade. That's the only way they don't pass, is if I get like, if I can see you can make like a match of a red card, and I have a red card, I can pass that to you if you're empty. Otherwise, yes, you're gonna pass, draw a card, and that triggers one of our passes that might end the game.
Okay, so it's not the end of the world. It's not like if it comes to someone's turn and they have no cards, the game is over. Nope. It's just an auto pass.
Yes, it's pretty much an auto pass unless someone can feed them a card. And that is usually a bad chain reaction because that late in the game, everybody's low on cards. So, yeah, very clever card play is crucial for this. If you're not making ultimate matches, you pretty much will not get through the pyramid. You have to be looking for every opportunity to get those whammies where you get the perfect mix.
I love it. Ultimatch from Fireside Games. This is coming out in June.
Yes, June 12th.
So very, very soon.
Yep.
All right.
Yep, it'll be a $9.95 price point. And yeah, it's basically being made as we speak. Going to be on a boat very soon. And then June 12th, hopefully on everybody's table.
All right, awesome. I'm just going to ask one time if you have anything else that you would like to talk about.
We do have another game coming later this year. It's going to be called Zoomies. It's about dog walkers with the sort of domino tile and scoring thing. But that's all I can tell right now, and I have nothing to show. So.
All right. Well, Justin, thanks for being a great sport. Thanks for talking with us again. And you still have your voice. It's day three. We're going to make it.
I believe in us. It's good. Thanks for having me on. Always a blast.
All right. Hey, everybody. It's Andrew, and I'm still at Gamma Expo. And I'm still tired. And I'm in the Lucky Duck booth with Devin. What's going on, Devin?
Nothing much. I mean, I also am tired. And I'm also at the Lucky Duck booth. And I'm also still at the Gamma Expo. So, I mean, I think we've got a lot of alignment going on right now.
We do have a lot of things in common. And we're also going to talk about the same two games. That's pretty incredible.
Wait, we're not... I thought you had a list of two different games, and we were just going to talk exhaustively about different things.
Well, you know everything, so I figured if I mentioned games, you could talk about those games.
Could you tell my wife that? Is that possible?
It all depends on whether or not she listens to the Family Gamers podcast.
Oh, I mean, I'll send her the clip for sure. if that's a soundbite off of it, I'll share it.
All right. Well, let's talk about Kiriai. So we got this game in front of us. This is a, like, samurai combat dueling game for two players.
Sure. So Kiriai the Duel came out at the end of last year. It's with our partnership with Mugen Gaming. It's from the designer Hamabayashi. They encountered this at the Tokyo Game Fair, the Tokyo Game Market, and they fell in love with it. And so they started to work with that designer. And then as soon as we got our eyeballs on it, we said, yes, please. So it is a 16-card dueling game that comes in a Japanese Edo-era style wallet. And the goal is to be the first player to hit your opponent twice successfully. So you're on a battlefield, you're moving in a linear line from one end to the other, you're getting closer to your opponent, or you're backing away from them. You're never moving beyond them, though, because it's against the Bushido code. It's dishonorable to attack from behind, so you have to make sure that you are fighting honorably. Players have the same five cards to start with, and then there's three special cards, and you'll shuffle those up, deal one to each, so there's a little bit of hidden knowledge that gives you some spice in your battle against each other. It's all about anticipating what your opponent is going to do, and then hopefully lining up both your stance changes, your maneuvers, and then your attacks to strike cleanly at them and get a fatal blow and then a killing blow afterwards. Two hits and you're out. It probably takes longer to teach players than it does to play. I mean, From your experience, do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that. We played this on the floor. Was that last night or was that the night before? I don't even remember
it
anymore.
It was 2 nights ago.
I have no real memory of what actually happened.
We simply exist right now.
Yeah, right. We are barely human beings. Okay. No, but I love this game because it is incredibly straightforward. It's very simple. It plays in like 10 minutes. And then, you know, you sit down, you shuffle up those three cards, you distribute them, and then you play it again. It's just, it really draws you into it and makes you want to keep going.
Yep, I agree. I think that it's one of those, I really like games where the mechanics allow you to mess with your opponent's head. Mm-hmm. And usually, unless I'm playing against my boss, Scott, works in my favor. Apparently he sees a window into my soul and I can't close it or hide it. So he's murdered me in this game too many times. But for the most part, I like playing against an opponent and what they think I'll do, and then to outfox them, outwit them, and hopefully outlive them as the better samurai on the field.
Yeah, this is a fantastic date game. This is a great game if you take one of your kids out and you're just kind of sitting there like, hey, let's play this. There's no words. There's just iconography. Mm-hmm. So you can play really at any age, I guess. I would probably call this 8+ just because of some of the mechanical complexity.
Yeah, but my 10-year-old, I think, would eat this up.
Yeah. My boys, definitely, and they're 9 and 13. So this is Kiriai the Duel. And it is available now. And how much is it? Where can you get it?
This is $14.99. So you can get it on the Lucky Duck website. You can get it at your local game stores. So it is available. And we are very, very excited for the continued presence of this little delightful pocket-sized game.
All right. I love it. And the next game we're going to talk about is not available yet, but it looks super awesome. And that is Tariki Castaway Island.
Yes, Tariki Castaway Island is an upcoming studio title from Lucky Duck. So typically in the past, we've had a lot of titles where we start off at crowdfunding and we get a big campaign going, and then we deliver to backers after the studio finishes development on it, and then it goes through the production cycle. This is one of the straight to retail games that we have, where the intention is to provide a 6 to 8 hours of adventure. You are intrepid explorers who are supposed to go to the island of Tariki in a controlled fashion to have a scientific expedition. But after a unfortunate clash with a massive storm in the water and then shipwrecking, you make it to Tariki. You're at your destination, but not in the way that you expected. And so instead of calmly exploring the world and writing down your scientific notes and your journals and being with your caretakers, you are a group of younglings who are trying to survive. So armed with hope and with a volleyball with a face on it, you're trying to see how the island of Tariki can be overcome, and for you to leave the island on your own terms rather than any terms that sound scary to yourselves. So you're exploring, you're gathering knowledge, and in the midst of it, as you find a way to harden yourself against the difficulties of survival on an uncharted island or on an unknown island, you will actually, in the midst of all of that, fulfill your scientific mission anyways and catalog the life around you and become veteran adventurers or explorers.
Explorers, yeah.
So it is a family game. It's got a digital hybrid integration with the apps that we've built, and you are going to uncover more about the island and build yourself up as the story continues.
I love it. Lucky Duck, I mean, you guys in general have done such an incredible job with hybrid games and app integration and stuff like that. So every time I see it, I get a little bit more excited.
I'm looking forward to it a lot, and the artwork is gorgeous, so I can't wait for this to be not a prototype box in front of me, but a production copy that I can share with all of you.
All right, and so price point, when is this one coming out? What's the plan?
Ooh, I believe the price point is probably going to sit around the $39.99 where Flamecraft and Cosmocopus is. Don't quote me on that, even though I'm quoting things now in an audio format.
We're shooting for 40.
And then in terms of timeline of release, we're hoping that this will be an Essen game. So it's going to be, you know, Q3, Q4, 2024. It really just depends on all of the intangibles, I guess, that are outside of my control.
From my vantage point, it looks like a pretty baller Christmas gift.
I think it would be quite a delightful box under the tree.
All right, excellent. So that is Kiriai the Duel and Tariki Castaway Island, two games that I have my eyeballs on at Gamma Expo this year.
Are we still here?
We are still here.
Oh, man.
And we did, in fact, talk about the same two games.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh, so anyways, Cosmoctopus.
Cosmoctopus is currently at my house, so I cannot play it, but I will play it soon. Looking
I
forward to
it. I hope that you join the group of devotees and bring the great Inky-1 down into your realm.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much, Devin. This has been a blast.
All right. Thanks so much, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Hey, everybody, we are back at the Gamma Expo, and I am now with Matt Farlisi from Skybound Tabletop. Hello, sir!
What's up?
All right, so we are going to talk about some stuff that I've already heard a little bit of buzz about, and I would like you to tell our listeners about them. There's this game, Invincible, Escape from Mars.
Yeah, so Invincible came out February 21st. It just came out. Invincible Escape from Mars is based after the Amazon show and comic book of the same name, Invincible. It is a 4-10 player deduction game where one player is invincible and everyone else is either an astronaut or another hero. And it's based specifically off of episode 4, season 1, where Invincible is escorting astronauts to and from Mars for a mission. But it turns out he got there, there are these sequids, right? So sequids are there and they're taking over your brains. Basically, once they find out, there is a mad dash to get on the rocket ship and get home.
I would be dashing.
Yeah. So the game splits up where one player is invincible. Invincible can never become a sequid. He's got immunity for that kind of thing. But everybody else, the astronauts, however, can become sequids. If they are, they're trying to sabotage the missions and trying to escape on the ship home to take over the human race, right?
Sure.
But the astronauts and Invincible are trying to suss out who is a sequid and cleanse them to make them a human again. The big difference of this deduction game than others is rapidly changing roles. What that means is one round, you may be a sequid, and you're on the sequid team trying to sabotage a mission. Every round, there's an acquisition phase. So I'm going to say, Andrew, you are a sequid. And if you are a sequid, or if Brandon is a sequid, he will then tell me, yes, I am a sequid. You get rid of these cards, you are now on the human team.
Okay,
so now you've just changed.
Oh, so that's good.
Yeah, it is good. Except each round, I hand out new cards, and I might hand out another sequid, and you might immediately become a sequid again.
Okay.
And then, so now you're like, oh, yes, I'm a human. I feel great, but now I give you one of these. Just because one randomly comes out every round. So it's very funny. You never know who is on what team, right up until the end of the game. It plays in about 20 to 45 minutes, depending on player count, and it's great. $25.
Awesome.
It's out now. You can get it in Barnes & Noble stores. You can run to your Barnes & Noble right now and go grab it. You can go to our website and order it, or you can get it at your hobby store or wherever the store is stock Invincible stuff or board games.
Fantastic. So that it's Invincible Escape from Mars. Next is the game sitting right in front of me. It's called Sheep in Disguise. And that's not a sheep on the front of that box.
It is. Well, that's a T-Rex.
That is a T-Rex.
So there's a big T-Rex on the front of this box of Sheep in Disguise. Sheep in Disguise is a little set collection game where you're trying to collect flocks of sheep. So depending on the player count, you're trying to collect a certain amount of flocks of sheep. There might be, I have flocks of sheep, for instance, little night sheep, right?
Oh, the night sheep are very cute. I like the night sheep.
A little cowboy sheep, right?
Also cute.
You can try to get three of a kind. You get these little cute sheep. It's got some Take That in it. It really does play to the Exploding Kittens or Doomlings crowd. It's that similar type of Take That game with familiar art, artwork. Actually, one of the artists I worked on some of the Exploding Kittens stuff. So, this was a Kickstarter that came out already, and they sold it on Amazon, but we worked to pick it up to distribute it more widely.
Awesome.
You can get it in stores, Barnes & Noble again. I keep plugging Barnes, but they keep putting our games in their stores, so it's great. Go to Barnes and get all the Skybound
games. It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yes, please. Please go and pick up the Barnes & Noble games. But Sheep in Disguise is there now, and later in the year, we're going to be doing a Kickstarter for a new sheep game that is in the sheep verse. We're making a sheep verse.
The sheep verse.
It's different than Sheep in Disguise. It's going to be like a slapping game, but with some fun rules and some very cute sheep that are in disguise. And we're really excited about adding more sheep to the world. So.
All right. And the last game is the game that is currently behind you.
Yes.
This is a game called Contra Banter.
Yeah, Contra Banter is coming out in June. This is the only one that's not out yet. It is out in June. June 12th, I believe, is the date. This is a word smuggling party game where you and on your team will have three words. And your team will then be asked a question by the other team. You have 90 seconds to answer that question and tell a story. So the questions might be something like, if you could design your dream house, what would it be? So now in 90 seconds, you have to tell that story. But your three secret words are divorce, fourth, and repress. So you have to put those words into your story somehow without the other team knowing that those are the words, right? You're trying to sneak them into a conversation. If you get them by the other team without them guessing, you get points. As the other team, if you stop the clock and guess, you get the point. You guess the word. So say I say divorce, and they're like, hey, is your word divorce? And it's like, yes, that was one of my words. That team gets a point. However, the other team only has three guesses. So you get three chances to actually grab those words. Then you go three rounds. However, if you sneak by a word, say I snuck by repress, that word stays for round two, and you have to sneak by repress again. And in the third round. So it gets harder to keep sneaking the same word by. If one of your words gets guessed, then you get a brand new word. So you might not have divorce. He guessed divorce, so a new card comes out. It's temple. So now I got to work temple into a story about what your childhood home was like. So you can see how it gets difficult because it's, again, you know, talking about my childhood home in a temple might be a little weird. There's easy words. There's hard words. You can kind of change it if you want. Ninja, trauma. There's all these different kinds of words. Contrabanter is going to be come out in June. We're really excited about this one, too. So keep an eye out for it.
All right. Is there a penalty other than not having it available anymore for guessing wrong?
Well, you only have three guesses.
Right.
So if you guess wrong, it's one of your guesses.
So there's no penalty for it.
There's no penalty for it other than losing a guess.
Okay. So you might as well guess.
You got to guess. Well, if you don't guess during the conversation, at the end of the round, you have a chance to go back and think what you can use your guesses at that point and say, all right, I got two guesses left. Was it God? Was it, you know, temple? You know, you can say
right,
that.
Right. So. Yeah, I just could imagine myself taking notes at someone's story.
Yeah, then you have this like page. You can. I mean, there's nothing in the rules that you can't take notes, but no. Yeah.
That's just my level of ridiculousness. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for talking about a couple of games that are available or coming soon from Skybound Tabletop.
Thank you for coming to talk with me. Thank you for taking
your time. Come on.
Coming to hang out with me.
I would hang out with you anytime.
You're the best. Thanks, buddy.
All right. See ya.
Hi, everybody. It's Andrew at Gamma Expo, and I'm in an office, so it's quiet. I'm here with Jess Carrier from Thunderworks. Say hi.
Hi.
And we just finished playing a little bit of Stone Spine Architects, one of the latest games that has, I think, gone through Kickstarter and is now fulfilling and is available in stores now or soon?
It will be available in stores soon. We are filling to backers this month, and then we are going to be retail releasing at the end of April.
All right, the end of April, which to me is tomorrow. That's how my brain works right now. But this game is super fun. So Stone Spine Architects, ages 10 plus, 1 to 5 players. It says 45 to 60 minutes, but you taught me the game and we played 2 out of the 4 rounds in about 15 minutes, I feel like, or maybe it just flew by.
It does fly by because it's pretty enjoyable. I'll give it that. But most games, once you've gotten the gist of how the game goes, are probably going to run most people about 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible to see a gameplay window on a game that is actually accurate or maybe on the upper end of the estimate. So that's a refreshing thing. Usually you look at a game and say 45 to 60, that means 90.
Exactly. Well, and it depends somewhat on player count, like with many things. And we like to keep that into consideration when people are looking at the box. Most people are going to understand that if you're playing solo, it'll take a little bit less time versus the thought process of 5 people looking around the table at what other people's dungeons are looking like. But for the most part, we like to be pretty realistic so that you can trust what you see on the box from us.
I also think with this game, it is a simultaneous play game for the most part, mm-hmm. and then you're passing your card. So it's a little bit of that pick and pass kind of a game. So even if that player count goes up, it doesn't necessarily correlate one-to-one to the length of the game.
Exactly.
So, super fun game. Definitely check this one out. I'm very interested in this. I also want to talk about some more stuff. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right. So, let's talk about Citizens of the Spark.
Citizens of the Spark. We are just now announcing that. Those folks here at Gamma were the privileged first few to get a little taste of what's coming from that. Citizens of the Spark is going to be going directly to retail, so that will not be on Kickstarter. This one is a beautifully illustrated animal citizens game with a variable card setup. So you're going to have 30 unique animal citizens to choose from, and each game will play with 7 to 10 of those animals. Each of them being unique and having their own unique powers means that every game is going to be very distinct in the way that the cards interact with each other and the way that the strategy for everyone at the table is going to play out. It also has a lot of simultaneous play, so there's really no downtime between waiting for what the next person is going to do. There's the perfect amount of player interaction, and it's widely enjoyable by a huge range of ages, player styles. It's going to appeal to everything from the Magic the Gathering or Pokemon player. You've got your animals and your powers and your card combos, to strategic board gamers, and even Euro gamers or Tableau Builder fans are going to really enjoy this game. And it's by the incomparable designer Philippe Dubarry, who's had a little bit of a hiatus the last couple of years, and he's back in a big way.
Yeah, Philippe is incredible. I think he did a game called Fidelitas that we play and we really, really enjoy. I should mention one more thing about Stone Spine Architects. It is a role-player tale. So yes, it has a lot of role-player iconography. You can kind of sense the DNA underneath with the way that buying works and stuff like that. So there's definitely some similarities there. Citizens of Spark is not a role-player tale. It's completely different.
Correct, yes. So that one, while it does have some of the familiar anthropomorphic animals that find their way into many of the world of Ulos role-player tales, it is definitely set outside of that. And the concept that you're looking at is animals on a foreign planet that have gained sentience and developed a really egalitarian utopian society with high tech living alongside the natural world, and you're developing cities inside this world in the effort to kind of become the most glorious and splendid city of this world. And it's just absolutely beautiful that you don't have to feel like you're tearing down someone else as you're working to build up your stable of amazing council animals.
So the art in that game definitely looks different from role-player art. And that's kind of one of the things that made me think I should point out that Stone Spine Architects is a role-player tale and Citizens of Spark is not. But it's still, I mean, it is Thunderworks Games gorgeous.
Thank you. Well, I like to think we have pretty good art direction. We've had a lot of really talented artists that have worked with us, and we're incredibly grateful for that. Diego Sa did the art for Citizens of the Spark and also has worked on a number of our other games. So you'll see a little bit of touches of kind of the form of some of the creatures that might ring a little familiar, but the art style is very distinct, and you guys are going to love it. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It looked like most of the art was pretty much complete, like when we played it Monday night, Tuesday night, whenever that was, and it looks great. Next to that on the table was another game called Metro Runners.
Yes.
Talk about that.
That one is the most distinct game from our catalog. Again, not a role player tale. This is the first time we've branched into sci-fi. So we've got a very cyberpunk setting where you are a runner in this futuristic, semi-dystopian society, running very risky jobs for the underworld and for corrupt corporations. You're out there trying to just survive on the streets and get done what you can and be the best runner in the world. You're circling the city and the five districts of the city on a metro line, which is the Rondel. So it's a very Euro-style game. You're going to be doing contract fulfillment, resource management, a little bit of set collection, and then there's a very unique hacking tile puzzle component in the center of the board that as players attempt this hacking puzzle for extra points, it means that the puzzle changes constantly, and the challenge that comes along with that is really uniquely exciting to me, and it is also absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's very striking on the table for sure. It doesn't tickle my fancy the way that Citizens does and Stone Spine does, but it does look fantastic.
Yes.
It's a very defined aesthetic.
Yes. It's very vibrant. It has that kind of look of neon lit, wet streets that are rain slicked and grimy and gritty, but all at the same time exciting and fresh. And it's something very different from everything that we've done before. But as you play it, you were mentioning earlier, as we played Stone Spine Architects, that you can sometimes feel the vibe of a Thunderworks game. And as you play through Metro Runner, you definitely will see some of that flavor, the way that we like to orchestrate our games and the feel that we like to give you as a player.
I noticed you didn't compare it to Blade Runner, but I will compare it to Blade Runner.
Yes, it is lower C cyberpunk theme, unaffiliated with the capital C version. But they are wonderful people as well, I will note. But yeah, we are legally distinct in all ways from those IPs. but the setting is definitely reminiscent of things like Blade Runner, Cyberpunk, Shadowrun. So if you like that cutting edge technology with a little bit of a darker flavor, a little bit of a more sarcastic sense of humor than many of our other games, definitely check it out. It's very exciting. We just finished the Kickstarter on that in February, and we are looking to have that be our big Gen Con release. So if you're coming to Gen Con, stop by, pick it up, take a look. We look forward to showing people in the meantime at a few of the other conventions we'll be attending, but we think you guys are really going to like it.
Awesome. And so let's just kind of run through these three games a little bit. So Stonespine Architects, available my tomorrow, which is next month. And this is for ages 10 plus. I think if you can read, you can play this game. I think 8 plus could work if you're a gamer family. Let's talk about Citizens of the Spark.
Citizens of the Spark, I believe we are currently still planning as a rated for 14 plus. We are working on that, so TBD on the actual age rating based on testing. But I also believe that if your kid is playing Pokemon, your kid can play that game. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The level of strategy that you can employ is completely variable. If you want to play it as, I just want to get these fun animals out in my city and have a good time, great. If you want to be hyper strategic about it as a more strategic adult player, you absolutely can. But I definitely think it is going to be a great family game. I think kids and parents are going to really enjoy playing this together. And there's an aspect of kind of learning the interaction of the cards together with every game that makes it uniquely suitable for a family playing together. You're going to go over what the unique animals in each game are, what do they do, how do they play together, and then start going. So it's going to be a great way to open conversation with the people at your table.
Yeah, I can definitely see that game flexing down to probably 12 plus, maybe 10 plus. Again, gamer family, 10 plus seems to make sense to me. I think Metro Runners is probably going to be a little bit higher, like a 14 plus rating on that.
Yes, that one is going to be at a 14 plus based on both the content, the theme is a little bit darker, the complexity rating is a little bit higher.
Awesome. Well, that is three very exciting titles coming from Thunderworks. I'm excited. Everybody else should be excited as well.
Excellent. I hope you are. They are very, very fun, and I can confidently assert that you guys are going to enjoy playing these games with your families.
All right. It is Andrew at Gamma Expo 2024. Thanks so much, Jess. I appreciate it.
Of course. Anytime.
Hello, everybody. It is day. I don't even know what day it is. It's Thursday.
Thursday
of Gamma Expo.
Expo.
And I am in the Pink Hawk Games booth with Emily, the Grand Poobah.
Ooh, I'll be a Poobah.
You want to be a Poobah?
That's great.
Yeah, you can be a Poobah. You are the Grand Poobah of Pink Hawk Games. And we are going to talk about some amazing games. Emily is a Horizon Fellow, which, congratulations. That's super awesome and helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much. And you have two incredible games here, both of which are coming to Kickstarter at some point. One of them is farther away.
Yes.
But I might want it a little bit more.
I know. And that's the thing. The game that's coming second, I think, is like going to be a really big and exciting game. But like, gotta cut our teeth on something that.
And you know what? And this game over here, which I'm trying to avoid saying the name of because I want you to have the grand entrance, it's still amazing.
Awesome.
So let's talk about this one first.
All right. So the first game that we have coming out is Pirates of the High Tees. This is a set collection game of piracy and pastries. And I think, you know, this is based on the very true historical fact that pirates were super into afternoon tea. Right? I think we all know this.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, we are pirates who are trying to win our captain's regard by serving them the very best afternoon tea. So you're pairing sets of three dishes with a matching tea. There's a fun little action selection piece where you send your pirates into the different parts of the ship so that you can get your cannons and your monkeys and your strawberry shortcake, whatever you need, before you go to the captain's quarters and serve.
I mean, and don't put the strawberry shortcake in the cannon. That would be bad.
Not in the cannon, but you can put it on top of your ham sandwich if you really need that ham sandwich to be fruity. You're a pirate. You smash them up, right? It's going to be delicious.
That's outstanding. So when is this coming to Kickstarter?
So this is coming to Kickstarter in September, right around Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Mm-hmm. Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. Good point. Good catch.
All right. Awesome. And what do we have over here on this other table?
So on the other table is the game Good Kitties. Now, this is a co-op campaign strategy game of house cats taking over the world. So as we all know,
Cats spend every evening working on their missions, their objectives, as part of their larger plot for world domination.
And that's not even a joke. That's just true.
It's not even a joke. This was inspired by when I open the bedroom door in the morning and my cats stop what they're doing and look at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I've caught them in mid-plot.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a sort of 60-minute light to mid-weight strategy game. Because it's co-op, it does play well with kids and family, right? And there's actually variable difficulty levels, so you can sort of scale it down to a sort of like a light romp, or tune it all the way up to this is going to be really punishing. This dog and these mice, they're really coming for us.
I love that on this little flyer it says, "This game actually made me feel like a cat."
Yes, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to do with Pink Hawk Games, is to have really theme-driven mechanics. So all of the mechanics from the game are coming from what do cats do? And so, you know, there are times when you might have to take a bath, right, or chase a laser pointer or things like that, that are really trying to get you in the mind of what is it to be a cat on a mission, but very easily distractible.
Well, everybody wants to be a cat.
Everyone wants to be a cat. I want to be a cat.
Because a cat's the only cat who knows where it's at.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So both of these games are for ages 8+, right?
8+, yep. And I think what we're really trying to do is get these sort of light strategy games that have a lot of fun and whimsy, but enough sort of strategic bite that our adult strategy gamers are going to want to come back and play again and again.
All right. I love it. It's perfect. So Pirates of the High Tees crowdfunding this fall in September, you said.
Yep.
And then Good Kitties, we need to look out for that one probably next year.
The next year. Yep.
All right. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending a couple minutes talking.
Thank you so much for coming by.
That was really cool to listen to all those interviews and everything.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool to conduct all those interviews and everything. I'm especially excited for the stuff coming from Thunderworks. Hey, Nitra, we're actually in the middle of an exciting thing on our own. We have this March Madness thing going on.
Yeah, so technically we have two March Madness things going on because we used the name for one thing and then our daughter had a better idea.
Wow, a different idea.
So first March Madness is we are doing extra written reviews all month long. So if you like the Family Gamers reviews, please keep checking back on our site because all month we are trying to do two written reviews and a snap review every week.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is still March when you're listening to this, you should also definitely go vote in our March Madness bracket for Best Family Game.
Do you want to go over the winners and losers? So we just finished the round of 32. We just put up the round of 16 today, Saturday the 9th. And these are going to be up for the week. And then we'll close those polls either Thursday
Friday.
Night or Friday. Friday night? Okay, we'll close those polls on Friday. But that means that we already have 16 winners and 16 losers, Anitra.
We do. And they are all graphically represented in a bracket on the Sweet 16 page. But I'm just going to tell you the highlights and, I guess, lowlight of the round of 32.
Why don't you run through the left side and I'll run through the right side.
All right.
All right.
Well, on the left side, we had Sleeping Queens versus Santorini. Santorini won quite easily on that one. Patchwork versus Green Team wins. That one was a really close match. Green Team wins, edged it out at 54% of the votes. We had Point Salad versus Deep Sea Adventure. Point Salad won. We had Block Ness versus Machi Koro, and Machi Koro has advanced to the next round. We had Strike versus Animal Upon Animal, and Strike was the clear winner there. King Domino versus Century Golem Edition. We had so many people complain about this in the Family Gamers community. Like, that felt just mean. But it wasn't even a particularly close race. King Domino won easily.
That really makes me think that it was a close race that went to King Domino in people's hearts.
I think so, yeah.
Right, yeah.
We had Potion Explosion versus Abandon All Artichokes, and Potion Explosion was the winner on that one. And we had Sushi Go versus Codenames, which ended up for Sushi Go.
Yeah, I mean, both absolutely fantastic games, but I suppose if you're going to talk family games, that's the way
yeah.
it's going to go. All right, and on the other side of the bracket, we have some other incredible matchups. First up, we have Rhino Hero versus Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters. Ghost Fight and Treasure Hunters, a huge favorite among the writers at the Family Gamers website. However, it was Rhino Hero coming out on top of that one. Next, we have Dragon's Breath and Llama, both excellent games. Dragon's Breath coming out the winner on this one, which is setting up a little battle between two Hoppa games, Rhino
Hero. The battle of the yellow boxes.
And Dragon's Breath battling it out. Next, we have Go Nuts for Donuts and Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride coming in and smashing the donuts on that one.
Yes.
Next, we have, oh man, Similo and Unmatched.
This was the hardest one for me.
Man, Similo and Unmatched. Similo squeaking this one out. This is another one where,
it actually
again,
won pretty
because
easily.
It's a family game.
Yeah, Similo's a better family game.
Oh, it won easily, you're
pretty,
saying?
Pretty easily.
Okay, all right, well, fine. I stand corrected on that one. Next one, we have Dice Throne and Dinosaur Tea Party. Again, a little bit of a surprise for me on this one, I think. I mean, I don't disagree that Dinosaur Tea Party might be a better family game, but Dice Throne's got a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit surprised to see this one. Then, the battle of super popular games, both of which in the Spiels des Jahres competition, yeah, conversation, Just One versus Wingspan. The Birds squeaked this one out with 52% of the vote.
Just one or two votes could have swung that to Just One.
Unbelievable. So close on that one. Next, we have Drop It, which we've talked about a bazillion times.
I love Drop It.
But also Draftosaurus, which we talked about a bazillion times. The Dinosaurs win again, pulling it out against Drop It. Next, and finally, we had the classic Mastermind going up against, I guess, a modern classic, The Crazy Doctors in Quacks of Quedlinburg. Yeah, the Doctors crushed Mastermind with 83%.
Yeah, that one wasn't even close.
So let's go through our Sweet 16 matchups. We've got Santorini versus Green Team Wins.
That one's going to be hard.
Point Salad versus Machi Koro.
Mm-hmm.
Strike versus King Domino. Potion Explosion versus Sushi Go. And on the right side, what do we have, Anitra?
We got the Battle of the Yellow Boxes. Yep. Rhino Hero versus Dragon's Breath. We have Ticket to Ride versus Similo. More heavy hitters over there.
Unbelievable. I mean, the whole thing, right? I mean, when you boil it down to 16 games, it's hard.
Dinosaur Tea Party versus Wingspan. I'm pretty sure I know which one is going to win there.
So is this the old dinosaurs versus the new dinosaurs?
Ooh, maybe.
I guess it all depends on your belief system, right?
Yeah. But then we have one more with dinosaurs. We have Draftosaurus versus Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Oh, this one's the old dinosaurs versus the old dinosaurs. I see how it goes.
Exactly.
So we're super excited for this. We had a lot of really great participation. Tell your friends, vote early, vote often. We'll find out who, or what, I suppose, will become crowned the ultimate family game.
Even if you are listening to this after March 15th, you should still check back in because we will move on to the round of eight after this.
The Elite Eight.
The Elite Eight.
And then the Final Four.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come on. We watch basketball.
We will be doing this. We will be doing this all month long. So vote early, vote often.
All right. So head over to thefamilygamers.com to do that. But also, we'd love it if you just came and talked to us. And there's lots of places where you can come and talk to us.
Yeah. Well, we love comments on our stuff on the website, thefamilygamers.com.
Also, you can find us on the social medias at basically everything at Family Gamers AA for Andrew and Anitra. Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.
All the things.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be talking about the March Madness matchups in the Facebook community. Easiest way to get there is thefamilygamers.com/community. Or we'll also be talking about it on Discord. Join the family tabletop community with us and JP from Little Big Thumbs and Dr. Brian from Brains on Games and some other friends. We have a great time there talking about family games.
I should let you know, Anitra, that even though we just put them up, people are already voting on the Sweet 16.
I mean, I did. Mostly to make sure the polls worked.
But, yeah, right.
You know.
All right. So get in there and vote, please.
You can also email us, Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Andrew@thefamilygamers.com. Check out our Family Gamers and Play Games with Your Kids merchandise, t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, and more. We should put March Madness banners in. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, you can get all that stuff at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
Please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, tell your friends about it, and leave us a review if you're so inclined on whatever your podcast subscription source is. Mostly, tell people. Tell people about the Family Gamers podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You can find us on everything. Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, TuneIn, Spotify, etc.
Just search for The Family Gamers and look for that big meeple heart.
Mm-hmm. The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points like a dragon and his gold. Or her gold. Or her gold. Anyway. All right. I'm home. The stabilizing force has returned. I will go yell at our children now.
Thank you.
Until next time, everybody, play games with your kids.